The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hundreds of people reported missing after a major flash flooding event on the border of Nepal and Tibet.
Well, this is a major disaster, Natalia, that's unfolded just in the last few hours. Massive flash flooding sweeping through parts of Nepal, triggered by an avalanche of ice and rock that officials say has caused widespread damage to several villages, roads and other infrastructure. CCTV footage has emerged of the moment people attempted to flee just seconds before a mudslide swept through at the China border crossing, engulfing everything in its path. Authorities fear hundreds, if not thousands, have been caught in harm's way.
The flood was so powerful, so destructive, it washed away everything in its path.
The ferocity of that slide, I mean, it's just all the vehicles there and structures that are just being buried and sort of pushed aside.
What an appalling disaster.
Pretty shocking imagery coming out of Nepal, right on the border of Nepal and China. Hundreds missing, both countries looking for people. I mean, that footage looked like it was right out of a movie. And this happened on the other side of the world. But I think one interesting aspect of natural disasters as they occur today is there are cameras everywhere. And an experience like that, maybe decades ago, you would hear about it afterwards, or you would just see the footage or pictures of the aftermath, but seeing these things happen, you see the power of these natural forces. In that case, they're speculating that it was an earthquake, and we've had a lot of those recently. We heard about that in a message here in Edmond, just about earthquakes in South America, and then this one triggering a mudslide that led to this flooding And again, images where that looks like it's right out of a movie, taking down these giant concrete structures, ripping through these bridges, tearing through towns, and it happens so quickly. This is from Reuters. Nepal flash floods, at least 55 dead, hundreds of tourists missing near the Tibet border. A wall of mud and rock appeared to collapse into a river on the Himalayan border of Nepal and China's Tibet on Wednesday. And you saw it just rip through those buildings. I think as I was watching that this morning, I was thinking about the tsunami in Japan in 2011 and the way that wall of water just rose and started coming through buildings. How fast it happens. You could see the people running in one of those scenes. And there's no chance to escape something like that. You look at that and it should point you back to, again, our booklet, Why Natural Disasters? Why does God allow suffering like that? And as we point out in that book, God uses creation to communicate a message. As that book points out, God created all of these things. God created wind and water. And God communicates with these sorts of disasters. And maybe that doesn't happen in your country, but you can see the footage and it should cause you to pause and reflect and ask questions. It's suspected that an earthquake struck the region and triggered an ice rock avalanche at this river in Nepal, causing the floods. The river runs through both Nepal and Tibet. And then, of course, like I said, you can see the footage there on your screen of it just ripping through these really built-up areas. In the booklet, Why Natural Disasters, it says, the Bible reveals that God has set spiritual and physical laws in motion, and that He is presently allowing humans to develop their own ways of living contrary to His laws, and to reap the natural consequences that result from those ways, including weather upsets. And we try to hide from it. We reinforce our buildings, and there's something to be said about a good building code. But at some point, you can't escape these sorts of things. You can't outbuild an earthquake. You can't outbuild a mudslide like that. This book says, God has given to us liberally manifold physical blessings, yet we have raped our environment through godless monoculture on a massive scale, poisoned our food and water with body and mind-destroying chemicals, polluted our air, and created a huge high-cost medical pharmaceutical hospital industry to busily try to treat the massive life-destroying sicknesses and diseases of mind and body that our corrupt culture has generated. We'll come up with any solution, we'll answer it any way that we can, except looking at the real cause, except looking at the human mind, the human heart, except looking at God's law. We'll get to that throughout this program, just talking when we get to some more of these news stories in the United States. Just continuing on from the Why Natural Disasters booklet. It says, the Bible also shows that God, in His great purpose, permits Satan the devil, the current and temporary unseen ruler of this world, to interfere with weather patterns and to have a role in producing catastrophic weather for man's ultimate learning. You can look at what God did in the book of Job. There's plenty of verses that talk about God using weather to communicate a message. And then God, of course, promises protection. Many scriptures, this is from the booklet again, many scriptures show that God rewards and protects those who put Him first. If everyone in America and the world would look to God, the plagues would stop. And then Psalm 91 talks about, again, God looking after you, keeping you in all your ways. And you have to look at these disasters, and again, all of it you answer by, you have to go back to the beginning. You have to go to the questions asked in Mystery of the Ages. Well, who is the God of this world? What is God working out here with mankind? The booklet says, watching global conditions, the Bible's detailed descriptions of great tribulation to befall the world just before the second coming of Jesus Christ are unmistakably increasing in relevance and urgency. That mudslide in Nepal, it might not be the greatest or the deadliest natural disaster to ever occur. But again, I think seeing that footage, and then you see people as their family members are just taken away from them. It's pretty sobering. Just the amount of, I think, warning that God gives to us through technology to have the advancements that we do to basically get a message around the world from this pretty isolated event that happened on the other side of the world, to be sobered by that, to be humbled by that. The booklet says, in fact, the disasters for which some few are bracing themselves aren't just likely scenarios based on current trends. They were specifically prophesied in Scripture millennia ago to claim the lives of an unimaginable number of people in the developed world and beyond. It says, we need to prepare our minds for catastrophes because they are coming. We need to prepare our minds. I think it's in Isaiah where it says, meditate terror. Think about what is coming. Prepare for that sort of calamity. Not becoming a prepper, not building a bunker. Prepare for it mentally, though. Evaluate your life. Evaluate what you are doing. In this article, it's a really neat article. It's from 10 years ago now. It's titled, Is God Answering America's Prayers? It's by Mr. Gerald Fleury. I forgot to put it in my notes here, so I'm just going to read it on my screen. But he goes through Amos 4. And Amos 4, these verses are all building up, and they all talk about so-called natural disasters that God is using to communicate a message. Mr. Fleury says, Amos's prophecy continues, therefore thus will I do unto you, O Israel, or this is for our nations today, the descendants of Israel. You can read the United States and Britain in prophecy to understand that. And because I will do this unto you, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. For lo, he that forms the mountains and creates the wind and declares unto man what is his thought, that makes the morning darkness and treads upon the high places of the earth, the Lord, the God of hosts, is his name. Mr. Fleury says, note that God creates the wind that propels hurricanes. He has power over the elements, and also he knows what human beings are thinking. What a mighty being. God is using these natural elements in ways intended to turn us to him. He doesn't want to see us suffer these calamities, but if we fail to heed, he warns that worse curses will come. The opportunity to respond is closing fast. I think that's one really impactful aspect of, again, seeing that footage out there, is that it should serve as a warning. Seeing these earthquakes come up more and more around the globe, around South America, should be a warning. And again, our nations have had their share of these so-called natural disasters. But how do you respond? We need to prepare our minds for catastrophes, that booklet says. You can order a free copy of it. Again, it's titled Why Natural Disasters. You can go to the website, thetrumpet.com, and read a free, you can download it right now if you want to get into that. And again, it's all of these booklets basically allow you to use the Bible in analyzing world events. And this helps you, it goes to verses. It explains why things are happening. And you read that alongside your Bible, and it's a powerful message. Well, just hitting on a few other stories. Again, I think that theme from just that sobering event in Nepal, I think that is just threaded throughout some of these stories, especially as we get to some of the news in the United States, just about a religious resurgence. How excited people are about religion. And we've covered that quite a bit on this show. But you have this return to, I'll go through some of these stories where they're just so excited about, well, this just traditional values and traditional architecture, to the point where basically we're encouraging the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. It's fascinating watching all of these prophecies just moving alongside each other, and you don't exactly know every little detail about how they're going to be fulfilled. you probably wouldn't have thought that there would be this huge religious resurgence in the United States. But you put that together with 2 Kings 14 and Amos 7. I'll go through some quotes later on that are from Mr. Gerald Fleury's book, The Former Prophets. And he talks about basically this religious resurgence and the way of Jeroboam and how Jeroboam the second follows in the way of Jeroboam the first. And he's writing that. I think that book, the expanded version of it, was published in 2014, 2015, before President Trump had announced he was running to be president. And now we have this huge religious resurgence in the United States. But is that really going to solve America's problems? Or will things continue to get worse? Mr. Fleury talks about a temporary resurgence, one last chance to repent. But are people really turning to God? I've got an article that I'll get to in a bit about how marriage is such a great thing for families. It's a great article. But basically the point of it is if you're getting married now, that's like a sign of rebellion because you're going against the flow of society. And it has some great stats pointing out how beneficial marriage is for family, for children. It's great. But then it basically, well, just get married in any form that you can. Doesn't get to why marriage. Doesn't get to what the Bible explains about it. Doesn't get to why God created it. So at that level, well, it's just man's form of it. I have a couple stories here about just how excited a lot of people are in the United States about some recent news events. Again, particularly with just immigration regulations and rules, ICE arresting, getting illegals out of the country, and this is how we begin to fix America. And there is an aspect of that that is good. We have to have laws. There have to be rules. They need to be enforced. President Trump announced again that there's going to be a worldwide pause on visa appointments. Again, this can impact the work in several ways. This was Fox News. Trump administration pauses visa appointments worldwide amid heightened screening for applicants. So basically, they want to go through and say, hey, every consulate, every embassy, when you're screening these things, we need to do a more thorough check of, is this individual coming to the United States? Basically, what are the chances that they're going to be receiving taxpayer-funded benefits? The Trump administration has directed U.S. embassies and consulates around the world to postpone immigrant visa interviews while consular officers complete training on new public charge guidance, temporarily stalling applications that have reached the interview stage. The State Department told Diplomatic Post to reschedule immigrant visa interviews until consular offices complete the training on how to evaluate whether an applicant is likely to become a public charge. A public charge determination can make an immigrant visa applicant inadmissible under federal immigration law if officials determine the person is likely to become dependent on certain forms of public assistance after arriving in the U.S. So you can't blame them for wanting to do that. I mean, when we were trying to get visas into the UK, that's pretty much the first thing that comes up, is that you're not going to go over there and be a drain on the system. There's some more, quite a few stories about immigration and customs enforcement agents. Basically, they're at the point now where if you've been given the chance to self-deport, you know if you're here illegally or if you've overstayed a visa, and they've created this agreement system with quite a few third world countries that are not the country of origin for these illegals. And instead of deporting them back to their country of origin or the country that they're actually a citizen of, they're actually sending them to these other nations. And the logic there being, well, usually when you just put them back in Mexico or back in Central America, they just start the journey back over, so make it more difficult. This one news story, they're talking about these individuals that were, I think, from Cuba and Central America, and they're basically put on flights and sent to the Central African Republic, which is pretty jarring, but it's quite a huge deterrent if you are going to break the immigration laws. This is clip four. It's a CBS interview of one of these illegals that was deported and then sent to Africa. This is clip four.
Y Yasmani, no pueden salir de ese edificio. You cannot leave that building.
No, con el oficial solamente. Aquí afuera. Porque ya se llevaron a Daniel.
Wow.
Nos tienen aquí detenidos en un centro. No podemos salir, no tenemos documentos, sufriendo por nuestra familia. En un continente que no conocemos, otra cultura. Hay mucha violencia aquí en la calle, no podemos salir.
Los Estados Unidos nunca te avisó que te iban a deportar a África. The U.S. never gave you notice that you were getting sent to Africa.
No, a las 5 horas en el avión fue que vine a enterarme que veníamos a África.
Were you deported because of a criminal record?
Yo no tengo ningún antecedente criminal, solo infracciones de tránsito.
Where are the other deportees from?
Nepal.
Nepal?
Vietnam.
Cuba, Ecuador,
Honduras,
and Africa.
And
Russia, too. Pero ninguno de ustedes es de ese país. None of you are from that country.
No, ninguno somos de ese país.
None. Están atrapados. You're stuck.
Estamos atrapados en este edificio.
Y en Africa. And in Africa.
Y en Africa. Otro continente que no conocemos. Y este es un país bien violento, que lo buscó en YouTube. Puede ser que nos vean sin documento y nos pueden matar, nos pueden arrestar como le pasó al compañero Daniel ayer.
Sorry, I forgot to point out that you had to read the subtitles on that. What CBS leaves out there is that these aren't just, you know, well, you're already breaking the law coming in illegally or overstaying that visa. But a lot of these guys were given, they're basically, the Trump administration started with saying, we're going to pay you to self-deport. If you leave, we cover your flights. We give you $2,000 or $3,000 to leave. And then these individuals are the ones who still did not leave. And basically there's now this program set up where the United States has these agreements with these worse off third world nations than where the people came from. And now they are being sent back there. And then the Trump administration was making a point out of, yeah, let everybody know that this is what's going to happen if you break the rules. A lot of people, again, celebrating this because, well, now it means the United States doesn't have to deal with them. They're not in our injustice system that just lets them out 2 weeks after they're put behind bars. You see a lot of people obviously crying out about how wrong it is, and there's a lot of people celebrating how right it is. There's a lot of division in our country. There's a lot of people that are celebrating it as if this is, you know, we're on the path to becoming the greatest empire for another 500 years. And Donald Trump is the one to do it. And this is the resurgence that will last forever. And then you look at some of these other stories just about immorality, what Mr. Fleury covered yesterday on the show about these women that are literally child sacrifice at the altar of the DEI or the mental health officials. Mothers murdering their babies, and women just flocking to their defense. Mr. Fleury had a program a couple months ago, the Book of Judges. You can read that for yourself. And you can read that book, and you can, there's parts of that that you would read, and you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you think, this is ancient times, it's so awful, this is terrible. You can't fathom things like this happening in a modern nation like the United States. And now it's pretty routine in the headlines where there are these stories that are as graphic as what you'd read in the Book of Judges. And Mr. Fleury's made that point on this show. I mean, you can see the United States and Britain in prophecy. You can see the descendants of Israel by the blessings, and you can also see it by the curses. This article, this is from Red State, get on the story of all the DEI hires. The last historic candidate, first black openly gay man in the South wins special election. So this is more of the progress They check all the DEI boxes. I guess the only thing that would probably get him more national attention is if he was a transgender. Because, well, we just keep coming up with these boxes to tick, so you're the first of something. You look at this other story from Philadelphia. There's all the controversy over President Trump trying to build this ballroom, which you would think, you know, it's just because it's Trump. There has to be the opponents to it. I mean, just expanding and renovating and building a larger structure, a more secure facility. I mean, everything has to be controversial, of course. So this district attorney, Larry Krasner, he's been, he's one of those Soros-funded district attorneys that lets criminals out or just doesn't prosecute them. And he said we're going to blow up the ballroom. This is clip three.
And I'm going to have a paperweight sitting on my desk. You know what that paperweight's going to be? It's going to be a piece of the ballroom after we all blow it up. That's what it's going to be. In an official ceremony, just so we're clear. In an official ceremony, we're going to blow it up, and we're going to get the taxpayers their money back by selling all the pieces as paperweights, and I will have one on my desk.
What is going on? It's one thing for him to just be some basement leftist that's just pink hair or whatever. He's a district attorney. And is basically saying, yeah, Trump's going to finish it, and then we're going to blow it up. And then he kind of double. I mean, it'll be an official detonation. We'll do it lawfully. I mean, there's enough criticism because Trump, the construction keeps getting held up in court. So there's all these pictures of Trump can't finish the building, he can't build it. And then they're basically saying, let him build it and then we'll blow it up. And this is, he's talking about a president that's had, well, I can't even keep track of the amount of assassination attempts on him at this point. I mean, three or four that have come pretty close. Two or three at least where the gun was actually fired. One where the bullet actually hit him. And here is a district attorney, we're going to blow it up. I think it was Madonna who said the same thing in 2017. I've thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House. And then you just flip that if Republicans were saying that. Imagine Republicans saying that about Barack Obama. My point being, you can't fix this. And look at just the absolute craziness. On both sides, there's will worship everywhere. I've got an article later on that talks about the religious resurgence. And it's written by a radical atheist, but he makes some good points about how crazy religion can be. And then the religionists make a lot of good points about how crazy atheists can be. Because at the end of the day, they both get back to will worship, as Mr. Fleury points out. Again, that's in America Under Attack. It's in the Trumpet Articles, the new age of will worship. Every man doing what's right in his own eyes. And you can put the veneer on it that you want and say, well, I'm religious, I'm doing it because of this. Or I'm an atheist and I'm doing it for this way. And it's still worshiping the will, trusting in your own heart. Not looking at, for the religious sphere, well, what does the Bible actually say about doing this? What does the Bible actually say the doctrine should be? A lot of excitement right now in the United States, but then you look at these stories and you think, how can this be salvaged? You need Christ to return. You need the government of God. That's the only solution at the end of the day that will bring real results. Just in doing the news research, I mean, there's all this talk about Dolly Parton. I don't know much about her, never really cared, didn't think any of her songs were that great. But now President Trump is saying, well, we're going to lower the flags to half-mast for a whole week. She's just like now this symbol of Americana. And everybody's talking about the 80s were so great. We've got to get back to that. We're moving in that direction. I think she's, I don't know, 60s, 70s, 80s. The height of her fame. And all these, the Trump administration officials, just get back to the golden years, the Reagan era in the 80s, and we'll be just fine. You look at what Mr. Armstrong was saying during the 80s. While all these clips are being played that people now will look back at, and there's always going to be the nostalgia or, well, things were just better when I was younger. And I'm sure people will do it in another 10 years and look back at the 90s as the golden age, and 10 years after that, the early 2000s. But you look at what Mr. Armstrong was saying all along the way there, and there were these massive moral breakdowns, as he pointed out, after World War I and World War II, where the floodgates were open, the restrictions were gone, that slippery slope. Mr. Armstrong wouldn't point back to the 80s and say, if you can just get back there, we'll be fine. Here's some clips from, oh, I don't have the exact date here. But again, what Mr. Armstrong is talking about, just in the direction that the United States was moving in. At this era where a lot of people now would point back to and say, yeah, that was that. That's what we need to get back to. This is clip 5 from Mr. Armstrong.
So let's look at the spiritual progress or retrogression. Anything like spiritual progress has been going backward in almost exactly the ratio that the physical progress has been going forward. As science and technology have developed and advanced, morals and spiritual progress has waned and gone backward just as rapidly. You ever think of that before? When I was a boy, we didn't have any such problem as divorce and remarriage. I never thought about divorce.
He talks about the moral slide, things getting worse and worse, and a lot of people, they'll quote stats. Well, these things are down. It's improving in this area. And man just is so sophisticated in sin, finds different ways to cover it up, to change the numbers, to make it look like you're better than you are. But then, what is the human condition getting better? Our hearts turning to God the Father. This religious resurgence, this is a Fox periodically, they're big on this. Everybody on the networks, they've got their necklace with the cross on. Everybody's pretty religious, and they give you the update every few weeks about how hot religion is. Here's a short clip from Fox News, clip 1.
A Christian revival across the country. Bible sales increasing over 40% since 2022. Religion app downloads surging nearly 80%. That increase since 2019. And Christian music Spotify streams up 50% from 2019.
This is it. We're fixing everything. Ignore all the, 50% of the nation being just totally off. And then now it's, well, we're moving in the right direction. The Bible sales are up. Well, can we get into what the Bible says? Can we read the Bible? Can we get into what it teaches about the Sabbath? I mean, if you want to get into that and you want to talk about what Mr. Armstrong taught, you'll get kicked off of the religious state TV stations. There was a church that was renovated here in Oklahoma, I think around Tulsa. And they renovated the interior, and it looks like this old European-style church. And everybody is just, they're so excited because, well, tradition is back. The religious resurgence. We're looking at the old customs and styles. And they like that because you can grab onto something. There's a culture there. It's concrete. It's not, sappy religion. But is that really the answer? As Mr. Fleury points out, you can read in the Holy Roman Empire and Prophecy Book, you can read in the True History of God's True Church. Those religious resurgences of the past were not great time periods in man's history. Here's another clip from Mr. Armstrong, clip 7.
Divorce is a national sin. We have many national sins right here in the United States that God says is sin, and things that even in our religions today we pronounce as right and holy,
And I want to tell you, there is a way that seems right to a man, but it is not the way that is right to God. And the way to find God is to forsake our ways.
The religious resurgence, okay, well, what's your religion? Well, it's whatever feels right to me. I mean, who are you to tell me what my spirituality should be? That's between me and my Creator. And well, Bible sales are up. Well, we're going to talk about what the Bible teaches. I'm just going to have my own interpretation of it. That's what Mr. Armstrong says. Even sin and things that even in our religions today we pronounce as right and holy. And there's a way that seems right to a man, or we just redefine it. I mean, there's plenty of examples in the Trump administration where, well, here's the religious resurgence on one hand. Oh, well, what about the way that individual lives? Who am I to judge them on their spirituality? This is an article at The Telegraph, again, a British newspaper. Getting married could soon be the most rebellious act of all. It's a neat article, talks about the strengths of marriages for a society. I mean, a strong society is built on strong families. Imagine if our society had an institution associated with greater family stability, better outcomes for children, less reliance on the state, and greater social mobility. Then imagine politicians, including those who noisily and unrelentingly complain about inequality, refusing to champion it, or worse, looking down their noses at it. So, of course, what you've seen marriage come under attack. You've seen the institution of the family come under attack. This article is pointing out, well, if we want to fix a lot of these things, we need the stability of the family structure. They're talking about in Britain. This author says, Britain has witnessed the total collapse of marriage rates in the last 50 years. In 1970, the marriage rate in England and Wales was approaching 80 marriages for every 1,000 men. Today, it is 18. For centuries, people tended to tie the knot in their early 20s. The median age at which men now enter their first legal partnership is around 33. And there's just every excuse under the sun. I don't have money. I don't want to do this. I want to enjoy my 20s on my own. We live in just such a selfish society as well. And this article points out, I mean, obviously Mr. Armstrong said one of the big dangers is getting married way too young. And he lays out in The Missing Dimension in Sex, that time period in the mid-20s when you've got a career established. But the point I want to make here is there are rules. There's directives, there's guidance you should receive. And this article basically, they conclude with, well, you know, just get married in whatever form you can. And we don't get back to, well, what does God say about this? We don't get back to, why does marriage exist? Well, they have this sort of atheistic approach to it. Well, we can objectively study that it is more beneficial to have this relationship. Well, why is that there? Why was that created? We've got to ask, well, what is God's law? What does God say about these things? That ties into this religious resurgence, and it's nice to see people wanting to make those changes, wanting to do those things. But it can be in vain if it's not done the way God says to do it. Another clip here from Mr. Armstrong. This is clip 8.
Now, my friends, we're doing the same thing today. After God has blessed us, He had to give us the wealth and the prosperity He did. He's had to give us peace on the land. He's had to give us these things. God won World War II and won World War I for us. We didn't win it by our own strength. Don't you think we did? Because we didn't. God Almighty did it. By miracles, we won those two wars because God did it for us. God was carrying out His faithful promise to Abraham because Abraham, 430 years before the Old Covenant, 430 years before the law of Moses, Abraham kept God's commandments and His statutes and His judgments. And for that reason, we have the prosperity we do. And what have we done with it? Oh, how we profane the holy things of God.
What have we done with those blessings? We think that we earned it. We did it. It was American ingenuity. That's what that July 4th celebration was a couple months ago at America's 250. Well, it was all the doing of a few great men at this point in history. We've got to ask the deeper questions. We've got to look at it. Every time I go through these events, I'm always just struck by how you need the United States and Britain in prophecy. That's why Mr. Armstrong called it the key, the master key to understanding the Bible, to understanding world events. We didn't earn that. We didn't do that ourselves. We have them. We have these blessings. And what have we done? And our export is sin, a culture that is sin. This article from The Guardian, I referred to this earlier, it's written by an atheist, or it's written about an atheist. It's titled, A Bible-Sized Blind Spot, Congressman Sounds Alarm on Rising Christian Nationalism. It's written by this atheist in Congress here in the United States. He basically wrote a book, and he's talking about, well, just how religious everything is now at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. And he's right on a few things, very wrong on a few other things. That's man's way of doing things. But as I read some of these quotes, think about 2 Kings 14. Think about Amos 7. Think about what Mr. Fleury has written in the former prophet's book. Think about the way of Jeroboam. I mean, the answer to everything is we need true religion. And this false religion or version of religion or a version of Christianity, it's we have the historical track record that shows that that doesn't solve the problems. And then this guy acts as though, well, if we don't have religion, we'd have a perfect world. And he totally ignores the atheistic empires of the 20th century that killed millions more than even the religious empires. At any rate, as we say on this show, man cannot get it. Everyone is wrong. There's the way of man, Satan's way, and then there is God's way. This article says, the biggest and politically most potent of these groups is the NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation, which ironically, I think Che An, who we've mentioned on this show, he's one of the foremost leaders of that movement at the moment. The biggest and politically most potent is the New Apostolic Reformation, a decentralized network of self-declared apostles and prophets who reject traditional denominational authority in favor of direct revelation. NAR prophets such as Paula White Cain and Lance Wallnau cast Trump as a modern King Cyrus, a flawed pagan ruler anointed by God to save his chosen people, to provide a divine permission structure for millions of evangelicals to overlook Trump's moral failings. So he talks about all these different variations and interpretations of these people that are in Trump's orbit who believe he's fulfilling these types or these roles. And then you read America Under Attack, read Great Again, and what we say, what Mr. Gerald Fleury says, that makes total sense for what President Trump is doing. This article goes on to say, on the Catholic flank are the rad trads, a small but highly influential subculture that resent the liberalizing Vatican reforms of the 1960s and believes that Catholic moral authority should govern the state. Sympathizers include Vice President J.D. Vance and political strategist Steve Bannon. Neo-Nazi agitator Nick Fuentes openly calls for a Catholic monarchy to replace the U.S. Constitution. There are all these different forms of religion around him. What Paula White teaches is not what Pete Hegseth teaches, what J.D. Vance. So it's just this hodgepodge of all these different religions. And it is fascinating when you read chapter 9 of the former prophet's book and what Mr. Gerald Fleury said in 2014, basically about what leadership would look like in the United States before the fall of this country. It says, nowhere is the advance of Christian nationalism, they have to write it that way because they want it to sound totally awful, nowhere is the advance of Christian nationalism more striking than inside the Capitol itself, which Huffman, that's the congressman, describes as a shadow theocracy. Visitors on official tours see Statuary Hall and hear speeches on the separation of powers. They do not see the sprawling tax-subsidized ministry industrial complex operating under the dome. Pastors lurk like lobbyists in Capitol hallways, Huffman writes. The most influential is Ralph Drollinger's Capitol Ministries, which hosts weekly Bible studies for members of the House, Senate, and White House cabinet. Drollinger is a 7'2" former basketball player, teaches a free market gospel that frames environmentalism as a sin against God's dominion mandate, and instructs cabinet members on how to inject biblical literalism into federal policy. Again, there's just religions everywhere. It's all over the Capitol. It's amazing when you understand Bible prophecy, when you have America under attack, when you have Great Again, when you have the former prophets, and you can be informed by the Bible about these events. There's just will worship everywhere. It's not true religion. And if it's not turning to true religion, it's not going to work. It's going to fail. And this sort of ties in along with this, because there's a religious resurgence in the United States. It's happening in Europe too. The version of it in the United States is not the same as what happens in Europe. But you get guys like J.D. Vance, who they really like the AFD. And they think, well, what they're having in Germany, that's the same as what we're trying to do here. This quote, or this article at The Atlantic, there's quite a bit more detail in here that I just won't have time to get into. It's titled, "The German Far Right is Poised for a Breakthrough. The AfD could do something next month that would mark a first in the country's post-war history." So they're projected to win an election in Saxony-Anhalt. That's a German state of about 2 million people. Basically, they would be in total control of the local government there. Similar, I guess, to like a state winning a state house or a district maybe in the United States. But basically, they would have an outright majority to run things the way that they want. And this is creating a huge problem for the left and the moderate parties in Germany. It says, if the AfD doesn't reach that threshold of getting an outright majority, the spotlight, this is, I think, in the general election, the spotlight would turn to the Christian Democratic Union, the CDU, the party of German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. The Christian Democrats would face a dilemma, whether to breach the firewall and work with the AfD or join hands with the far-left party, Die Linke, and in a last-ditch effort to keep the far-right from taking power. So both options are not great for the CDU. Basically, well, what if we try to work with the AfD and we can try to pull them back to moderate them? Because they know the AfD is just surging in popularity. And there are a lot of things that the AfD points out that do need to be fixed. And the CDU is kind of following, let's try to do that so that people aren't running to the AfD and they can work with us instead. And then the CDU says, well, we don't want to work with the far right. So what if we try to get a majority with the left? And then that just antagonizes people even more that were maybe moderate to move to the AfD. Deutsche Welle says, most voters expect Friedrich Merz to leave office early. He's struggling to figure out how to handle this. 54% of Germans expect Chancellor Friedrich Merz to leave office before the 2029 federal election, according to a new YouGov poll. So if the CDU turns to the left, that makes the AfD more powerful, probably more popular. And then there's do we join the AfD and work with them to try to moderate them? and the whole country is turning more to the right. And it's in response to things that they would want to challenge: Islam, illegal immigration. But you look historically at a religious resurgence in Europe, in Germany, in the Holy Roman Empire, and that's not an exciting thing for the world. You look at the political upheaval and uncertainty in Germany, that's fertile ground for a strong German leader to rise up. They want a Donald Trump. They want someone that can take control and move the nation the way that they want. The Atlantic continues. Every organ, they're interviewing a German diplomat, says every organ of elite opinion tells people they can't vote for the AfD. And many people respond by saying, yes, yes, I can. Who are you to tell me what to do? He uses a bit more colorful language there. But basically, people are tired of being told, well, this is the path you have to take, or you're an immoral bigot. So more people are moving to the AfD. The Atlantic says, why does an election in a relatively small German state matter? Because what happens in Germany matters. The Atlantic, I mean, they've had a couple of articles the past few months that you don't read this content anywhere else. But it's stronger, and we've been writing about it at the Trumpet far longer than the Atlantic. Almost a century now, if you go back to Mr. Armstrong and what he was saying and writing in the late 20s and early 30s. Why does an election in a relatively small German state matter? Because what happens in Germany matters. We've been saying that for decades. That also gets us kicked off of TV stations, to say something like that. The Atlantic says that's been the nature of the German problem for almost two centuries. What to do with this country, larger and more prosperous than its neighbors, that has caused so much torment for Europe and for the world? Well, we got to keep our eyes on Germany. That's what Mr. Gerald Fleury said right after Donald Trump was elected in 2024. Basically, like hours after President Trump won this huge election that we'd been talking about for years, Mr. Gerald Fleury said, Germany is responding. Germany is doing this. We have to look at Germany. Here, the Atlantic basically is saying, what happens there matters. It's a pretty big deal because, well, they've started two world wars in the last 100 plus years. They're the powerhouse of Europe. They're the beating heart of Europe. Notice the Atlantic. The German question is back as the country breaks with post-war taboos. Germany is rearming, spending billions to turn its army into the strongest in Europe. Later on it says, but the circumstances command greater attention. As Henry Morgenthau Jr., President Franklin Roosevelt's Treasury Secretary, titled his post-war book on the defeated Axis power, Germany is our problem. Saxony-Anhalt is sometimes called the heartland of German history. It's the birthplace of the Protestant Reformation, where Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the church door in Wittenberg. Cities such as the capital, Magdeburg, were important centers of the Holy Roman Empire. It's the Atlantic, just looking back at some history that we point out frequently at thetrumpet.com. And you can look at the history, and that should be a warning. And then you've got to couple that with Bible prophecy. You've got to couple that with God's warning to America and Britain. And then all of these events, you see it all just coalescing and moving to the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Ultimately, it leads to the return of Jesus Christ. There's a lot of hope. It's the only hope in these events. And while it is sobering, and while it should be humbling to see these things happen, it's very exciting because of what Bible prophecy says it leads to. That is all I have time for on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us on The Trumpet Daily. If you have comments for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to follow us on Rumble or YouTube, and we look forward to seeing you again tomorrow.